If you don't identify yourself as a homosexual person, the religious right will use you by just simply turning their head. But once you're out, you're out. After communism fell, what would be the issue that would call the co-belligerents together? They're now meeting around the issue of abortion and homosexuality. They're not just using lesbian and gay, anti-gay rhetoric to raise money and mobilize volunteers. They really believe we should be killed.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Australian queers demand to be seen in upcoming census, more woke U.S. companies put to sleep by right-wing media troll, and prophetic Mel White's perspective on religion and politics. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 31st, 2024. Facing a firestorm of criticism from queer groups and progressive politicians, the Australian Bureau of Statistics 2026 census will consider including one question about sexuality. The Labour Party had explicitly promised to survey LGBTQ plus Australians in the census during their 2023 election campaign. However, Assistant Treasury Minister Andrew Leigh announced on August 25th that no question about sexuality or gender would be added. Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles excused the decision, saying, "We do not want to open up divisive debates in the community." The omission announcement and rationale sparked outrage, and a new question is now being drafted. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese explained the process in an August 30th interview on ABC Radio Melbourne.
As long as the testing goes okay and a question can be developed in a way that is sensitive and that gets the information that is required, and the ABS will be testing that. There's a draft question has been developed this week, which they will go and test.
The Trans Justice Project was one of the organizations that pressured the government. CEO Jackie Turner argued, "What the government is saying by excluding us from the census is that our communities, our families, and our friends don't count. The trans community needs this data to tell us just how big our community is, where we are living, and to determine what our health and service needs actually are." Equality Australia Chief Executive Anna Brown applauded the government's limited response, but it's only the beginning. She said in no uncertain terms, "The federal government shouldn't pick and choose those of us who are worthy of being counted. Until questions on gender identity and intersex people are included, the census won't include all Australians."
The U.S. Census Bureau is also developing better ways to include sexual orientation and gender identity. Following a public comment period, the White House Office of Management and Budget approved new test questions in mid-July for its monthly American Community Survey. The current series of survey questions began in August and will continue through the end of the year. Results are expected in early 2026. It's used to evaluate household information and determine how federal funds should be spent. A 2022 survey counted 1.3 million households headed by same-gender couples. About 741,000 were legally married. That's 57%. The survey also found that about 31% of all queer couples were interracial, more than their heterosexual counterparts. There are significant limitations to the survey, as noted by Whitman Walker Institute and the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. They pointed out in an August 29th blog post that by only identifying queer couple-led households, the survey ignores 5 in 6 LGBTQ U.S. adults who are not living in coupled relationships.
A right-wing zealot's campaign to stamp out the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs of U.S. corporations claimed 4 more victories this week. whiskey maker Jack Daniels, home improvement and supply retailer Lowe's, motorcycle maker Harley Davidson, and the Ford Motor Company are now abandoning their queer commitments. They joined Tractor Supply Company and home and farm equipment maker John Deere, all surrendering DEI efforts in their workplaces and public demonstrations. The one-man anti-woke band is far-right political internet troll Robbie Starbuck. A self-styled giant corporation slayer, Starbuck crowed to his social media followers, "We are winning, and one by one we will bring sanity back to corporate America." Starbuck is a conspiracy theorist who's claimed, among other things, that tap water is turning kids queer. Virtually all of Starbuck's hit lists are high scores in the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index. President Kelly Robinson called Starbuck a MAGA bully. She points out that his only business experience is hawking vitamins marketed by people profiting off of COVID disinformation. Still, Starbuck can attest, "We are now forcing multi-billion dollar organizations to change their policies without even posting, just from fear they have of being the next company that we expose." This may bring an unexpected end to the clashes regarding the over-corporatization of Pride events.
On the other end of the corporate spectrum, Aetna will be the first U.S. insurance company to extend fertility treatment coverage to LGBTQ people. A lawsuit had challenged disparities in the company's coverage of intrauterine insemination between heterosexual and queer policyholders. The settlement agreement helped prompt the change in policy announced this week. Writer Emma Goidell was the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit, along with her partner, Ilana Kaplan. The couple was forced to pay $45,000 through the student health plan for Columbia University before Aetna agreed to cover the procedure. Aetna's chief medical officer, Dr. Kathy Moffitt, called the new policy yet another demonstration of Aetna's commitment to women's health across all communities, including LGBTQ+ and unpartnered people. Goidell's press release said, "We hope other insurance companies will follow Aetna's example and review their policies to make sure everyone has equal access to fertility care."
The privacy rights of New Hampshire's transgender public school students got the backing of the state Supreme Court this week. Manchester School District policy requires staff to address all students by their requested names and pronouns. Such personal information cannot be shared with a parent or legal guardian without the student's permission. The mother of a child in the district claimed that the policy infringed on her parental rights, but the August 30th ruling rejected her complaint. Justices found that the district's rule placed no limits on the plaintiff's ability to parent her child as she sees fit. LGBTQ legal advocates and defenders and the ACLU of New Hampshire defended the district's policy with the support of a local mom and her trans high school son. The attorneys said in a joint statement, "We are pleased with the court's decision to affirm what we already know, that students deserve to be treated with dignity and respect and have a right to freely express who they are without the fear of being forcibly outed."
Finally, the Austin, Texas Brewtorium Brewery and Kitchen has cooked up an appropriate response to Dow's violent threats. Their June 9th Pride Month drag event was stopped in mid-show by a bomb threat. A police search of the premises found nothing suspicious, but it forced the venue to close for the rest of the day. Not to be drowned out, management announced the launch of a new tropical-flavored brew on August 23rd. It's fruited to the max with grapefruit, mango, pink guava, and orange. A portion of its sales will go to Veterans for Equality, a group of military vets who provide protective services for events hosted by marginalized communities like the Brewtorium's Shuttered Drag Brunch. In announcing the birth of the fruity new brew, blatantly named Big Gay Beer, Brewtorium proclaimed, "Our continued commitment to being a safe place for queer people and all good, kind, and loving individuals in our city."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 31st, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Everybody who loves God and struggles with being queer, just know you're not alone. In God, there's no fear. No matter what they say, look, God, he's still here.
We celebrate you because you're truly amazing. So who are they to judge? Kings and queens, true supreme.
White Christian nationalism didn't come out of nowhere. The seeds of this dangerous anti-democratic ideology that has a stranglehold on today's Republican politics can clearly be seen in this 30-year-old interview. Mel White is a gay Christian activist author who started out as the closeted Christian ghostwriter for some of the most powerful conservative Christian proselytizers in the U.S. He came out in 1994 with the book Stranger at the Gate, To Be Gay and Christian in America. Even then, he was realizing the trend toward politicizing evangelical thought.
The religious right has a political agenda, and it is, without exception, more than conservative now. It's a fundamentalist agenda. We say orthodoxy gone cultic. Fundamentalism is orthodoxy gone cultic. When you begin to see enemies under every bush, when you begin to feel prophetic in knowing exactly what God's will is for the nation, when you forget pluralism and when you forget democracy and want theocracy. So you begin to see the political agenda, and then you start realizing that the religious agenda is not only secondary, it's way down the line. Right now it's a power agenda, and that's what makes them frightening. They're true believers. This is not Machiavellian. They're not just using lesbian and gay, anti-gay rhetoric to raise money and mobilize volunteers. They really believe we should be killed. The Leviticus 20 passage says a man who sleeps with another man is an abomination of worthy of death. And on a talk show in Seattle just 4 or 5 days ago, they had a minister of a large fundamentalist church. And I said, do you really believe we should be killed? He said, well, it isn't easy to say, but that's what God's will is for you. And I said, well, then who should do that? The churches? And he said, no, the civil authorities. Oh, I said, then how do they do it? He said, well, that's why we're working so hard politically now, so that we can finally get men into power who will do God's will and will take God's orders seriously. And I said, Seattle, are you listening? Just beneath this patina of civility, they want us dead.
Jerry Falwell galvanized evangelicals in 1979 for an anti-LGBTQ campaign associated with Anita Bryant as the Moral Majority. Falwell's organization was later overshadowed by the Christian Coalition led by Christian Broadcasting Network founder Pat Robertson. Robertson actually ran for president in 1988, solidifying his role in religious right politics. Mel White and KPFK's Ian Masters discussed the impact of those organizations then and the implications for the future.
The size of the Christian Coalition is just approaching 1 million members now, and their dues are really heavy, and they are at work assigned to 50,000 American precincts. There's at least 12 in every precinct, and their goal is, one of their primary goals is to initiate legislation that will keep lesbian and gays from all rights. And yet, you see, that's just the facade. To say we have no rights, the next critical mass will be to say isolation, detention, and death.
Being straight myself, and I never wake up and say I'm straight, and I'm sure you don't wake up and say I'm gay. I mean, it's a sort of unnecessary dichotomy, really. But what I most fear is that the attacks on gays and lesbians is merely the unfurling of the fig leaf. I mean, they want to go after anybody who doesn't agree with them. I mean, straights have as much to fear as gays. You just happen to be the first and most visible. But look what happened when you have a theocracy. I mean, this is what I can't understand, why there isn't a kind of political left that comes up with the obvious warning that if you listen to Falwell and Robertson, they are no different from the Ayatollahs. They want a theocracy. This is not what the Founding Fathers had in mind. But let me ask you, just touch on what we were starting to develop a little while ago. It seems to me that what you're talking about in terms of the religious right is not Machiavellianism so much, as you mentioned, but a kind of Manichaeanism, that there's a need for an enemy. Is that a sort of social condition that's inherently American, given the nature of the people who first founded this country? I mean, the fact that they can switch from the communist devil to the homosexual attack on family values in the bat of an eye, it seems to me textbook Manichaeanism. They just need an enemy.
Yeah, I don't know if it's standard American operating policy historically. I would like to think of us as a more generous and more understanding and more sophisticated nation than that. But you sure see it happening now, don't you? That the spirit of fundamentalism, which took over the Iranian embassy and kept hostages for 400 some days, and the spirit of the fundamentalist Jew in Israel recently, who went into the synagogue, into the tomb of Abraham and killed all those believers, or the fundamentalist Muslim who's killing in return, and back and forth, you find that same spirit here. They want to purge the nation, to cleanse it, and so they look for an enemy to mobilize their forces, to raise money, to see that we will save this nation from its economic turmoil, from its social disorder, from its end of absolute morality, and we will have something new and wonderful and glorious. And so wherever you see fundamentalism breaking out, whether it's in the Christian world or the other worlds, it's frightening. And the need for an enemy.
Mel White could hardly have been more prescient. The MAGA movement that descended from those fundamentalist groups is also fueled by targeting enemies. White may shed some light on the question, how do evangelical Christians overlook Donald Trump's unchristian behavior? And how convicted Watergate operative Chuck Colson became another link to the right-wing religious coalitions of today?
I was with Falwell discussing with him this need for what he calls co-belligerence. Co-belligerency is a term that they use often now. When Jerry realized he needed to organize the moral majority back in 79, he was afraid that he didn't have enough troops that were real fundamentalist Christians. So Francis Schaeffer, another one of my clients, my first client on the religious right, he said to Jerry, look, in the Old Testament, God used pagans to do his will. Therefore, Jerry, you could use pagans too. You don't have to have Christians. And Jerry said, no, the New Testament says I cannot be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Oh, no, that's not what we're talking about. You don't have to be equally yoked with pagans. Your message will always predominate, and your message is always more important than what they have to do, but you just need to find some enemy you have in common, and then you can use them to do what you want to do in the world. So after communism fell, what would be the issue that would call the co-belligerents together? I mean, last week, Chuck Colson, a fundamentalist of the first order, or of the worst order, called a meeting introducing bishops and cardinals of the Catholic Church to Pat Robertson and to the people from the conservative Protestant religious right. They haven't met together since Martin Luther, but they're now meeting around the issue of abortion and homosexuality. It was Hitler's first political action committee, and it worked. Why wouldn't it work for them? And the problem with that is, once you have a co-belligerent issue that holds you all together, you can't then give those people a fair hearing. They can't talk to gay and lesbian people about the reality that we don't have an agenda, that we don't pose a threat to the values of this country, that we're not a threat to the American family, that we don't molest children, that we are in the military serving with dignity and courage. They can't talk about those realities because they need that co-belligerency issue to mobilize everything they're doing.
At heart, this is a question about diversity versus somebody's idea of uniformity.
Jesus, I think, would be really, really incensed if he were here today and would call the Pharisees by their first name. And the old notion of sacrificing a minority for the greater good is what I'm afraid is going to happen to us and is, in fact, already happening. They're taking our children away. They're not allowing us to have any rights as couples. Gary and I have been together 10 years. We have no rights. Economically, you should see how we're taxed and double penalized for being together. When you see what they're actually doing now, I think we're being sacrificed already all over this country.
You're listening to excerpts from a 1994 interview with Stranger at the Gate author Mel White, originally conducted by KPFK's Ian Masters. White was there when the giant televangelist empires began. He talks about the influence of conservative Christian media on society, influence that is now being felt in Africa and other parts of the world. The religious right and the political right met again when Jerry Falwell aligned with the infamous Iran-Contragate conspirator Oliver North.
Remember their billion-dollar media empires. Time magazine showed that Pat's is $1 billion. I think the larger empire actually is Jan and Paul Crouch, who owns the Trinity Broadcasting Network. They have 440 radio and television stations around the country and the world, with 8 in Italy and 7 in Russia and several in the Ukraine. And I mean, it's unbelievable, the media power. And that media power is to begin to condition people in every country, in every clime, that the fundamentalist political agenda must be saluted and followed in order to save the world from destruction. So behind that is the notion that Jesus will come back when we have created the appropriate climate. And the only way that appropriate climate can be created is to eliminate sin. And sin, gay and lesbian people are the right now the current...
whipping boy.
Yeah, we're the current sin that's the worst. And so when for example, Jerry Falwell sees Ollie North going down at the Senate hearings and really suffering, he invites Ollie to Lynchburg and gives him an honorary degree at the lowest moment in Ollie's life. He celebrates him with 10,000 students applauding and cheering. They send Ollie back, and now Ollie has become one of the nation's great, best-known men and best-known heroes to a huge population. I travel with Ollie. I saw the kind of enthusiasm that he evokes everywhere. So now to get Ollie into power is simply an extension of Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson's dreams for Virginia and for the country. So when people vote for Ollie, they're voting for the fundamentalist agenda, which is very unlike what most of them would really agree to. You know, the notion, for example, that they're Jewish-friendly because they've gotten more awards for their Zionist. I mean, I can't believe the awards they've gotten from prime ministers of Israel. But in fact, what is their goal? That by the year 2000, some say 2010, Pat Robertson says quite frankly on the air, I want all Jews to be Christians so that we can, you know, that Israel then will be the landing point for Jesus to come back. So that basically, again, it's political. We're transforming, we're cleansing, we're purging, whether by conversion. Remember Clovis, the story in the 4th century? If you didn't become a Christian, you lost your head. Well, basically, that's where they're going.
From parade prohibitions to book bans, Mel White was able to predict the agenda of religion-based adversaries.
The media would love for me to say bad things, evil things about Pat Robertson, you know, that he's really in it for the money, that he just wants to be president, all this stuff. No, 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 no. Pat Robertson loves Jesus and sees himself as the person who should reign until Jesus returns. That's why he calls his university Regent College. A regent is someone in place until the king returns, ruling in place. So I think he's a true believer. I think he's sincere. I think he's sincerely wrong. And Pat Robertson does not want freedom for all people. He wants fundamentalism to triumph. He doesn't want us to have our parades or our authors on the library shelves. If you look at the initiatives that they're trying to pass with his million coalition, Christian coalition group out there, that you can't say anything favorable in a classroom about homosexuality. We're talking about extremism here of the meanest sort. So once we're past the fact that he's affable and loves his wife and children and is sincere, then we have to see him as the demon that he is, given democracy's goals for freedom and understanding and acceptance.
Pat Robertson died in 2023, but his Christian media empire goes on, as does the rival Trinity Broadcasting Network. Mel White's Stranger at the Gate, To Be Gay and Christian in America, is now available as a free audio download at melwhite.org. His most recent book is Storming the Gate, Fighting Religion-Based Oppression with Soul Force.
I met Jesus at the gay pride parade. He was praying for us to be free. A man with a Bible yelled hatefully, and Jesus countered by taking a knee.
Good news, good news. Ain't that good news?
This Way Out historic broadcasts from 1988 to 2023 are now preserved and available for research and streaming at the American Archive of Public Broadcasting and at the University of California Santa Barbara Library's Special Collections.
Welcome to the inaugural broadcast of Inside Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
The early programs were titled Inside Out until an organization of the same name sent a cease and desist letter.
I'm Greg Gordon.
I'm Lucia Chappell. And during the next half hour, you'll hear reports on the United Kingdom's notoriously homophobic Clause 29.
Almost 200 lesbian and gay activists gather for a war conference in the United States.
In the Magic Kingdom, only heterosexuals can dance cheek to cheek.
And despite violence last September, lesbians and gays in Dubuque prepare for another march. And maybe you can help.
All that and even more now that you're tuning Inside Out.
This Way Out Preservation and Access Project was made possible by grants from UC Santa Barbara Libraries and the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, a collaboration between the Library of Congress and GBH. We thank Keith Brown and Ira Ruffles at Gay Spirit Radio and David Soibert at UC Santa Barbara for the loan of reel-to-reel tapes and cassettes for digitization. Digitization done by George Blood Audio in Philadelphia. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael LeBeau and Tanya Kane Perry and produced by Brian DeShazer. Thanks also to Ian Masters. You heard music by the Moody Blues, Erica Mason, and Ryan Casada. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Beaupre of Los Angeles, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KEUL Girdwood, Alaska, WGGT Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, CJOY Slocum Valley, British Columbia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.